Welcome to Sermons from First Presbyterian Church, Palo Alto. Each week, we share a recording of the Sunday sermon, offering theologically progressive, social justice-oriented reflections grounded in Scripture and what's happening in our lives and in the world. Most weeks, the sermon is preached by our pastor, the Reverend Tom Harris, and from time to time, we're joined by guest preachers. This week's sermon is the conclusion of the summer series on the Ten Requirements, also known as the Ten Commandments. Today's verse is Exodus 20, 17. Do not covet. Reverend Harris shares some of the limitations of the outdated examples given in the verse, but suggests that it still has rich meaning for us if we apply it more broadly. In this sermon, Reverend Harris showed two movie clips. One is from The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the Kings, when Frodo dangles the ring of power over the lava, then refuses to let it go. The other is the ending of It's a Wonderful Life, when the town comes together to help George Bailey. The first is an example of someone coveting one thing. The second is an example of someone who has let go of coveting a future he wanted and accepted the goodness of the life he has. For copyright reasons, the video and audio of the film clips have been edited out.
So let's begin by dealing with the problematic stuff in the 10th requirement. I see three problems in the 10th requirement. First, we're reminded in the 10th requirement that all of these commandments, whatever you want to call them, were really written for men. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. When this was written, only men had wives. But even today, it would still be rather limiting if the only spouse we were not warned to avoid coveting was a wife. You can covet husbands, you can covet life partners, don't covet wives. Second, the wife is put in the same category as the ox and the donkey. In other words, wives back then were property. Now, Deuteronomy's version tries to fix this problem by giving the wife her own sentence. In Deuteronomy, it says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's wife," period. "Neither shall you covet your neighbor's house or male or female slave or ox or donkey." But in Exodus, for some reason, house gets its own sentence, and the wife is thrown in with the animals, the slaves, and the other property. Which brings us to the third problem, that slavery is just completely and totally assumed and accepted. According to the Ten Requirements, owning slaves is not a problem, as long as you let your slaves rest one day a week and don't covet other people's. If we could amend the Ten Requirements, I think that would be on the top of my list of ones that need to be added in, is do not make people into slaves. But in the time and place this was written, the idea of the abolition of slavery had not entered the moral imagination. Now, fortunately, with this one, we can put all three of those problems aside and still find great value in the spirit of this requirement. All we have to do is just drop all of those examples from the end, all the things that it says you should not covet. Drop them all and just say, do not covet. That is, do not obsess about having or owning, whether it's things or people, or even having or owning an idea of the future that we don't currently have. Shel Silverstein's poem, Lester, is a great example of the problem of giving our energy and our attention to some future that we don't have, and thereby actually failing to live in the present that we do have. So I'm going to read you the poem, Lester. I don't think the math works in this poem, because if you have a wish, I think by the rules of wishing, if you have a wish and you wish for two more wishes, you don't have three. You have two, because you used one to get the two. But like I said last week, let's not let the facts get in the way of a good story. Lester was given a magic wish by the goblin who lives in the banyan tree. And with his wish, he wished for two more wishes. So now instead of just one wish, he cleverly had three. See, no, that doesn't work. And with each of these, he simply wished for three more wishes, which gave him three old wishes plus nine new, Again, no. And with each of these 12, he slyly wished for three more wishes, which added up to 46, or is it 52? See, he doesn't even know at this point. Well, anyway, he used each wish to wish for wishes till he had 5,007,018,034. And then he spread them on the ground and clapped his hands and danced around and skipped and sang and then sat down and wished for more and more and more. They multiplied while other people smiled and cried and loved and reached and touched and felt. Lester sat amid his wealth, stacked mountain high like stacks of gold, sat and counted and grew old. Then one Thursday night they found him dead with his wishes piled around him. And they counted the lot and found that not a single one was missing, all shiny and new. Here, take a few and think of Lester as you do. In a world of apples and kisses and shoes, he wasted his wishes on wishing. To covet, especially to covet some idea of a future life, is to spend our life collecting wishes. Now, I tried to think of other illustrations of coveting, and a couple came quickly to mind. Daffy Duck coming out of that burrow and seeing the cave of treasures with Bugs Bunny, and then jumping on Bugs Bunny until he's pushed him back in his hole while he said, "Mine, mine, 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 it's all mine." Or Veruca Salt in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. "I want the world, I want the whole world." Though both of those, and even Lester, are really kind of more about greed, which overlaps with coveting, but they're not quite the same. Greed is about wanting lots and lots and lots of something, while coveting can be about wanting just one thing so badly. So I think the best illustration of coveting is Frodo trying to let go of the ring of power in The Lord of the Rings.
At this point,
in that story, the ring of power is a magic ring that makes you invisible,
but
it also makes the wearer of the ring just absolutely obsessed with it. It's all they can think about.
Let it go.
And they'll do anything, they'll hurt anybody to have the ring and to keep it. When wearing the ring, the wearer comes under the control of the evil being Sauron, who forged the ring and is trying to get it back. And the character Gollum in the story, as you probably know, is the example of someone whose desire for the ring has just consumed him and made him into a shadow of himself. Now, I didn't go back and read the book, the books. I've read them several times. But the movie portrays this moment so powerfully. And I'm going to show you a clip. But to set this clip up, Frodo and Sam have the task of destroying this evil magic ring so that the world can be free of it, finally. Frodo carries the ring on a chain around his neck so that he doesn't have to wear it and come under its power, but it still has this power over him. He still knows it's always there. So in this scene, Frodo and Sam have traveled through this hellish landscape of Mordor to Mount Doom, where Frodo's going to throw the ring into the lava and destroy it forever. Sam has been Frodo's loyal and loving and devoted companion through all of the trials of this journey. His role is to support Frodo in this task of destroying the ring. I promise we're going to cut it off before things get too violent. So dramatic. And great music in the background. Well, what happens next in the scene is that Gollum arrives. He's been following them the whole time. He finally arrives. He comes up behind Sam. He hits him on the head with a rock. He jumps on invisible Frodo. Frodo's put on the ring and turned invisible, and they wrestle until Gollum takes the ring, and then they both fall off the edge of that cliff. Gollum falls into the lava, holding the ring, and finally destroys it that way and himself. Frodo grabs onto the edge of the cliff and is hanging on the edge of the cliff while Sam runs to help him. Sam reaches over the edge for his friend as Frodo dangles there for his life, And Sam looks at Frodo and says, "Don't let go. Don't you let go." And here is the critical point for this lesson on coveting. When Frodo is dangling the ring over the lava and starts to have second thoughts about keeping it for himself, Sam says, "Just let it go," which is ultimately part of the antidote for coveting, to just let go of our desires and our obsessions. But when Frodo himself is hanging over the cliff, holding on for dear life, Sam looks at him and says the exact opposite. "Don't let go," or the same in an opposite way. Don't let go. Just let go of the thing you covet, but don't let go of me. Don't let go of our friendship. Don't let go of our love. When it comes to our desires, some things lead us to death, and some things lead us to life. Desires for things, for money, for a specific vision of the future that we think we need to be happy can all lead us to death. But desire infused with love for friends and family and community and ultimately love for God, that kind of desire leads us to life. You could say a definition of coveting is desire without love. So in many ways, the 10th requirement and the first requirement, all the way back to number one, are two sides of the same coin. The first requirement is God saying, "I am Yahweh, your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Don't put anything else above love
and community." As the community comes together to share their money and support and appreciation
for George. The 10th is, do not covet. That is, don't put anything else above love and community and God. So we're going to close with another movie clip. It's like movie day in elementary school. In this clip, a man named George Bailey has spent his life serving his community, but wishing he were somewhere else. He has put aside his own dreams and his own desires to travel the world, live an exciting life in order to stay in his hometown and manage his family's struggling savings and loan. When a crisis happens and he is threatened with financial ruin and even prison for a mistake he didn't make, he's given a vision. It's a vision where he sees his community, what his community would have been like with if he had never been born. It's a vision of a community destroyed by greed and despair. And in part because he was not there, he had not been born in this vision, to be of service and to offer love at critical moments. In this final scene, he comes back to reality. He sees that it was all a vision that he was having, and now finally understands that he already has all of the wealth he never truly appreciated when he was focused on what he didn't have. So let me just close by pointing out two observations. First, that desire in that clip, desire wasn't the problem. He couldn't stop kissing his wife or hugging his children. Money was flowing freely. The community was drinking and celebrating. The problem was when his desires had been selfish. The problem was when his desire was for a life that he resented not having, when in fact he had so much life and so much love all around him. The second observation is notice all the ways the community and love and the divine flowed together. How Mary calls the sharing of money a miracle, and how they went from celebrating together to praising God in a single breath. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. The beloved community and the divine are two sides of the same coin, just as the first and 10th requirements are. When we put relationships first and build strong communities, and all of that is done based in divine love, then the power of greed and covetousness is broken. And that's the other part of the antidote. Part of it is just letting go of things, but the other part is taking hold of love. And so we move then from scarcity and despair to abundance and joy. Let go. Let go of all that is not love. But don't let go. Don't you let go of one another and God. Amen.
Thanks for listening to sermons from First Presbyterian Church Palo Alto, located at 1140 Cowper Street in Palo Alto, California. If you'd like to worship with us, we gather on Sundays at 10 a.m., both in person and online. You can find more information about our congregation, worship, and ministries at fpcpaloalto.org. We hope to see you soon.